I had my children on the floor. I was on my favourite blanket that my grandmother gave me on the floor like a cat.
And I realised in that moment the potential of what our bodies can really do as women.
Like, I could feel his head. I could do my own internal, like, yeah, his head, I could feel it.
I was in tears. I was just in tears and overwhelmed with gratitude.
Hi, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast, the podcast that is bringing embodied birth wisdom from women from all over the world sharing their natural birth stories. Don't forget to subscribe and download so that you can always have access to these empowering and positive natural birth stories.
Hi, my name is Anna, also known as the Spiritual Midwife, and I am the Natural Birth podcast host. I'm a midwife and a childbirth educator, a women's work facilitator, mentor, and coach, and I assist women in optimizing their chances of having an empowering and natural birth experience and to truly claim their birth as a rite of passage. If you want to know more about me and what I do in the world, then please visit me at thenaturalbirthcourse.com or connect with me on Instagram as the_spiritual_midwife. Now, if you love this podcast, then please consider taking a moment and leave a review, as this is how you can help us reach more women around the world with these natural and empowering birth stories. The Natural Birth Podcast also has a Patreon page, so if you'd like to shout me a cup of coffee to show me your appreciation for the podcast, then you can do that there. Thank you for all your support and love. It's deeply appreciated. Today on the Natural Birth Podcast, we have Shiva. Shiva is a mama of two, originally from Turkey, now living in Denver, Colorado. Besides being a mama, she's also a psychotherapist and a yoga teacher. And today we are going to talk about her two natural births. Her first was at a birth center, and even though it looked from the outside as a natural and normal birth, in the wake of that birth, Shiva found herself feeling like she had failed. She hadn't felt in her power and only felt her pains and how her past traumas seemed to impact her in her birthing. So when finding out that she was pregnant again, she went on a healing journey, trying to understand and face her traumas that had impacted her during her first birth. She went on having her second baby born, partially in coal, in water, in her home. It was the birth that she had wished and hoped and prayed for, but didn't know how she could achieve. Today, we will dive deeply into her births and the rite of passage and healing journey that she has been on. Curious about Shiva? Find her on Instagram as Shiva Jenkins. Hi, Shiva, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast. How are you today?
I'm great, thank you. It's wonderful to be with you.
It's wonderful to have you. I was so excited to get your email, and you shared about you just had this amazing natural birth and you wanted to share it with the world. And here we are now. Finally, we got this space for us to sit down. I do have a little cough. So if I do have a little cough in this episode, then you guys know I'm going to try to drink my hot water with honey, and hopefully I won't interrupt you too much.
Thank you.
Lovely to have you here. So I know you have two children. Mm-hmm. Let's start with getting pregnant with your first. Who were you then? And let's dive on into the first birth. I know that the first birth is not the one we're going to focus on today, but we're going to touch upon it. We're going to pull out the beautiful pearls of wisdom that you gained from it and the woman you became through that, right? Hey. Mm.
Yeah. So it was kind of a whirlwind how we got pregnant the first time. So I met my husband, and he was getting divorced, and he had a 2-year-old at the time. But things just clicked, and I always wanted to be a mom, and I loved being the idea of being a stepmom to this wonderful 2-year-old, and kind of healing through that, because all three of us have gone through divorce. And so the idea of stepping in and helping with that was something really motivating for me. So we got married a year after we met, and then got pregnant pretty soon after, about 3 months after that. And so my first son was actually born close to our anniversary of everything, anniversary of meeting, and then a year later, anniversary of getting married. So that was May 26th was when we met, and May 21st was when my first son was born. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because it was just 3 months, but in those 3 months when we were waiting to get pregnant, it was kind of like, I realized that I didn't know how stressed out I was, and that was really impacting things. It's funny how we get used to just being stressed. And when I finally realized that, you know, there are these other signs that I'm stressed out, and I let go, that's when the pregnancy was able to happen. It was kind of like this mental thing of trust the universe. When you start trusting, other things will fall into place. So that was the first kind of parenting lesson was about trust and letting go, just so that I had the space to bring a child into the world. Yeah. It was an interesting pregnancy because we were newly married, and my husband was still in the midst of a custody battle. So there was a good bit of stress in that. And it was interesting noticing how I noticed my stress and its impact on my baby, and kind of being mindful of that through the pregnancy. And I was still working a very stressful job at the time, and realizing that I didn't want that when my son came. I was working with gang involved youth in the Denver inner city, and being their psychotherapist. And it was just very, it was very taxing, and also very fear invoking. So I wanted to kind of know that after I gave birth, I wasn't going to do that for a period of time, because I wanted to be available with my whole heart for my family. So we decided to, I did some research and decided to give birth at a birth center, one of the freestanding birth centers. And it was a decision that my family was very opposed to. Everyone had given birth in a hospital. Yeah. Why would you? It was seen as kind of irresponsible. And it kind of fit with the whole thing of, you know, you got married so quickly and now you're having a child. Of course, you decide to go and give birth at a birth center. So there was a lot of, on my part, I re-educated myself, but I just wanted my family to see, like, this is going to work out. All of you will see that the body and the intuition have power, and this is going to work. I had originally thought I was going to give birth at this hospital that I used to work at. But I went there at 6 weeks, and the midwife had told me, I'm kind of confused about why you're here. You know, your pregnancy isn't even viable yet. And it was just the dismissal that I received with that. That was very, that's not the care that I'm looking for. I'm not looking to be a statistic. I'd like someone who sees me and this journey as valid and important. Wow. And so that was the last thing that pushed me away from going to a hospital for what I hoped would be a healthy pregnancy. And so I found this birth center, and in the back of my mind, there was this voice like, you could do a home birth. You totally can. And it just seemed too far away from everything that I'd known up till that point. So I settled on this freestanding birth center, which was already a risk because there are several birth centers here that are connected to hospitals or even on the same floor as labor and delivery. So it's kind of like for people who want to take that risk, but not really.
because it seems like a risk. But I
which to everybody listening, it's not a risk at all.
Not,
if you're low risk, you don't have any really high risk medical conditions, you're your baby, like birthing in your own home with a midwife or birth center is just as safe, if not safer, than the
hospital.
But I know what you're saying, like that's the general idea though, isn't it? Like, ooh, it's so risky. Yeah
And you know, talking to my friends, that's how they feel, because this is like what we're indoctrinated with.
Yeah.
Thinking about birth. And so I found this place called Huga, which I really liked the name and the meaning of like comfort, ease, and enjoyment of life. So I decided to go with them and got my husband convinced, because he's very, you know, more medical model. But I got him to come to a tour, and he just got a feel for it. And he'd already been through hospital birth and I think felt comfortable with the idea of birth, but not with the idea of it being outside of hospital. But he went with it. He said, it's your body. I respect you and your decisions. So, and it was warmer, you know, the midwifery care model is so, it's just warm. That's how it's supposed to be, right? Like midwife is with the woman and they're supposed to make you feel like they're with you. And I really felt that way, which was a contrast from how I felt at the hospital. And so, yeah, that went really smoothly. And then, I remember labor started very kind of textbook 3 days before, lost the mucus plug. And then one night, like the contractions just kind of started lightly. And I was like all excited because they were getting closer and closer together. And then my water broke around 1:30 in the morning. And I remember just the panic of that. It was the first point where the birth started to kind of get ahead of me. Because I was like, oh my gosh, he's been swimming in this water and now it's out. And what's he going to do? And how is this going to happen? So all the things that I had kind of learned up until that point, all the podcasts I'd listened to, I hadn't found you yet. All the books I had read, I'd read all of Ina May's stuff. It just went out the window and I was in this place of panic. And I even, when I called the birth center midwife, I said, I can see the vernix on the floor. This is crazy. What are we doing? And she's just trying to convince me, like, it's okay. This is what's supposed to happen, right? Yeah. Just go with it. But I was in this place of like, oh my gosh, I don't know how I could have prepared better necessarily for that moment, because it was such a change from anything I'd ever lived in my life before, yeah. You know? And so it was interesting. And anyway, so that the water broke, and then, you know, my husband kind of came online. I was telling him, you know, oh, you can try and rest. But then I said, no, you're with me. We're going to go through this.
Yeah.
And he was kind of grumbly because he remembered this is the beginning of no sleep for X amount of years, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I started laboring, and it was so interesting because I told him when I was in Laborland, I said, I need to watch jellyfish. And I need to watch jellyfish moving to calming music. I need you to find this for me. And, wow. You know, another contraction. So he's like frantically looking on YouTube, and he found jellyfish set to beautiful, calming music. Wow. So this has been someone has thought of this before, I guess. And so that's what I watched between my contractions to try to keep me calm.
Wow. So that's just something that like came to you in the moment. I need to watch jellyfish to calm music. I love that. How random.
It's like so amazing. Random.
But it is really amazing. I mean, a lot of people get the image of like flowers opening.
Right.
Right. Because yeah. of the yoni, the vagina like opening. And yeah. And I just want to say as well, you know, when you said, you know, kind of it just came over you when your waters broke, like that's the thing. Like this is your rite of passage. It's the first time, you don't know what to expect. I guess it's more like, how can you prepare if anyone's listening going like, oh, what if that happens to me? Like how you prepare is like just to know that you'll probably have lots of those moments throughout your labor and birth. Mm-hmm. And like, how will you bring yourself back? And like, you instantly got that, like your inner wisdom went like, jellyfish. That's how I'm going to come back. You know?
Yeah. And it was. And I think it's because, like you said, you know, we're looking there. There was part of my not neocortex that was looking for an image that had an affinity with what was happening in my body. And if you think of jellyfish, like they kind of, they just float and there's a opening right on the bottom. Mm. And so now that you say that, it makes sense. It did seem random at the time, but it really fits with what my body was trying to achieve for me. Yeah. So that kept me calm. And my midwives had told me I need to wait until 4:11. So the contractions are 4 minutes apart, lasting a minute for an hour. And I remember I was just like, this seems impossible to wait like this. But the jellyfish really kind of were my companions to get to that point. And then, so that was 1:30 to about 4:15. I had said to myself, I said, I will be 4:11 by 4:15. It was like a visualization, and I decided it has to be like that. And at 4:15, I looked at my tracker of the contractions and I was like, it's about 57 minutes. That's an hour. I'm calling my midwife. They're going to let me come. So, it was 4:15 and I was 4:11 because I visualized it. And I called the midwife and she said, okay, I'll meet you at the birth center in an hour. And I was like, in an hour? How am I supposed to negotiate this for another hour? I had held on so tight to getting to this point. Anyway, we came to the birth center, and that was the moment that I decided I didn't want to give birth in a birth center, because transferring from your home to someplace else when you're about 3:11 is insane. Yeah. Just to be that far along. It was hard for me to get into a car. I made it through. It was fine. It's amazing what we can get through when we just get through it. Yeah. When you don't think about, you know, how am I going to do this for X amount of time, but you say, I'm just going to do this right now.
Yeah.
It gets you through those moments. However, in terms of curating my next experience, those moments were informative. I didn't want to have to do that again. And that's how I ended up with my second birth the way that it was. But so we got to the birth center and I was already 5 centimeters, which was like a huge relief. And then I was like 10 centimeters 2 hours later. So it was moving pretty quickly, but I was exhausted, and the exhaustion was making it such that it was hard for me to cope with the contractions emotionally. Mm. And so I was falling asleep between the contractions, but I was super, super tired and I couldn't even imagine, like, how am I going to push? Like, I've been up for a whole day already. Like, I had worked the day before when the contractions started and all of this. So it was a lot of like wrestling inside. And what was interesting was a lot of the kind of negative thoughts about myself that I had as a result of some of the trauma that I went through as in my childhood, those thoughts they had materialized and were standing in the room with me in a way.
Oh my God. I just want to pause you here because like this is giving me, I get this sometimes, like here's a truth bomb. Like my whole body goes tingling and goosebumpy. Mm-hmm. This is such pivotal information, what you're sharing right now, that I just want everyone to really stop and listen to and hear, because I speak on this so often, how everything comes up at the birth altar. Oh my God, you know, yeah. And some things, of course, we can never truly fully heal because we go in cycles and we continue to like heal things. You know, our life is not linear, even though we live in a world that says it is. We're cyclic beings. And so there's always layers to things and traumas and wounding that we go through life. And, you know, this is why I just encourage women that I work with, either, you know, one-on-one coaching or from in my online space or face-to-face, if you know you live where I live, to start so early in pregnancy, even pre-pregnancy, like working through like different layers of yourself, spiritual, mm-hmm. cultural, emotional, mental, physical, and to dare to look at your woundings or your fears and all these things, because they will otherwise come to your birth altar. And a lot of times with first-time mamas, I see this. And I, you know, when I am in their birth space together, a lot of times we have to go through it together, you know, meeting a block and going like, what's here? Okay, what do you need to have a tantrum right now? Like a three-year-old, do you need to have a big cry in my arms? You know, do you need to, you know what I mean? Like the mother wound, the father wound. There's so many things that can surface. And I love that you bring this up so much, because this is pivotal information for women to hear. So please tell us, oh God, I can't wait to hear. Yeah. Tell us how that was for you.
So I had anticipated it because during my pregnancy, I had kind of like a re-experiencing of a particular trauma where like the mama bear part of me came out and I was like, oh my gosh, you know, what if this person finds me right now and can hurt my child or something like, so I had to work through that during my pregnancy of being aware that, oh, you know, that that's still a fear that some part of my brain lives with. And now that I'm about to become a mother, I want the entire world to be safe. And so this is coming back. And so I actually met with like a spiritual healer right before the birth. And she did some Reiki and like there's like a cord cutting thing where you can sever ties between people who you need to sever ties with. And I remember I felt great relief from her doing that. But that was one thing. There had been so many other things. And each time you have a trauma, there is like a core belief about yourself that is not adaptive, but that sticks with you. You know, like you feel like, oh, I deserved that. I'm not good enough. I will always suffer in this way or whatever that core belief is. And so I had a bunch of those. And they came into the room. And when I was in transition, like 6 to 8 centimeters, they often talk about how you kind of like, you get loose and really open and you, that tearing apart feeling that you start having, that's when they entered in. And I remember I was like begging the people in the room, just please like, help me, help me, help me. And I realized that it was those parts of me that had been abandoned or alone or super hurt. And they were just like, help me because I can't do this because I'm not good enough because I'm going to mess this up some way. All those core beliefs were rushing forth. And it was like a psychodrama, like acting out all of these things with the various people that were in the room. And that desperation, like I felt like a desperate animal that was just like you, please, you have to help me. I can't do this. And the emotional valence, you know, was not necessarily matching what was, I'm just giving birth, but I was re-experiencing those wounds. I was re-experiencing that pain. And I think that that's part of why, even though that birth was natural, unmedicated, uncomplicated, I have a beautiful son from it, wasn't in a hospital, I walked away from it feeling torn open in a way. I had seen parts of myself that just had no trust in myself and felt like I couldn't do anything. And seeing that so raw, was hard to then walk away and be like, oh, motherhood, I've got this, because I didn't feel that way. I didn't feel like I had anything. I didn't feel like I could do anything because I had just been, you know, all of this stuff had come to the surface. You know, when you're going about your life day to day, being single or being without a child necessarily, you can kind of keep things tight and push things down perhaps. But the process of having to take care of someone, even if you're not a biological mom, the process of relationship and then definitely a process of birth opens this up. And you come at motherhood with this new raw self that is aware of all the things that are inside of you, because they're being triggered in so many different ways. So that was interesting, like having that fight in that room, and I got through it, right? So my son's heart was decelerating when he was in my pelvis, although I looked over the birth chart and it didn't decelerate anything crazy. I think he went down to between 100 and 115, but the midwife was saying that he wasn't recovering quickly enough. But my home birth midwife said a lot of that is normal fluctuation of heart rates, but medicalized people who are still part of the medicalized system, which birth centers sometimes can be, are more conservative in that way and can view that as more of an issue than a home birth midwife would view it.
And also just like for the listeners, it can be, because what it sounds to me what you're saying in your pelvis is like, so the pushing phase, when you're pushing your baby. So I mean, sometimes that happens because the cord gets compressed, like, or the head, it's a head compression. And they are so equipped to handle that. Like if a baby has had a normal pregnancy, normal labor, if there's stress during the actual birth phase, like they're so resilient. They're so resilient, made to, you know, be birthed and withstand deprivation from oxygen throughout the contractions, especially at the actual birth phase. Like they have all this cocktail of hormones going through. They're just like, they're in their own trance, especially if they are in a natural birth setting, like they haven't had any drugs coming through. Like they're kind of just like a mama can go through this trance-like state in the end and all this stuff. The baby does the same. You know, they have their own little process in there that protects them and makes them calm and can handle all of this. So like, you know, for some people go like, oh, you know, when they birth, like, oh my God, poor baby. But, and yeah, like birthing is an ordeal. I'm not saying that. But they also, they are protected by nature. Most of the time, the journey is definitely, you know, a journey. But they're designed to be birthed.
Yes. And I didn't have that trust at that time. Neither did my husband. So when he recounts this part, he said there was a complication in the delivery is how he puts it. And I'm like, no, there wasn't. Everything was fine. But I think it was stressful because we don't know that we can trust that nature has made this perfect, both for mom and baby, to the extent possible, right? But so Ted, my husband, was supposed to catch. That was my plan. I wanted him to catch my first son, Vicky. But at that point, when the decelerations were happening and they weren't recovering to my midwife's desired level, she moved Ted out of the way. She put her hands on my knees and she said, okay, we're going to get this baby out right now. And it was three pushes later he came out. But it was something about, they call it like using my midwife voice, which is, she got me to like refocus. And that was the other part of the trauma stuff that was coming up that disappointed me a little bit. Like there was this fear that I was going to just tear open and die. And there was this other voice in my head that was like, you silly girl, why do you care about that? You should be just focused on pushing this baby out no matter what. And so there was this interesting kind of like, but I'm going to die and rip open and all of this. And then this other part that was like, stop being a wimp and just do it. So that like very stern critical voice was also like demoralizing for me a little bit. But the midwife came in and she did kind of, what she did was help me become present again, because I was lost in these other voices, other times. In that point, and she was able to kind of reach through, hold my hand and say, you're coming with me this way. And so, yeah, he came out and, he was very little, which, was probably helpful because it was my first time. And, he was just 6 pounds, 2 ounces. I think, I don't remember the kilograms. I think it's 2778 kilograms. But what was sad also was that in those first photos, I'm not like, you know, those blissed out pictures where the mom is just like, oh, I'm so happy he's here. It was more like you could see pain in my face because I had a lot of internal, like emotional pain that was coming through. And I always felt bad. Like, I almost don't want Zeki to see those first pictures because I don't want him to think I wasn't happy he was here. I went through some sort of ordeal. I went through definitely a labyrinth with lots of monsters in it.
It sounds so, like, you know, you went through your own spiritual war, and this is the thing, isn't it? Like, it really, I mean, I understand that the intensity of that, and I've witnessed women go through that. As an observer and as a midwife, I see the power in that, and like the rite of passage that you did go through. And yeah, to me, it sounds like, and you mentioned that, you know, you felt very open afterwards, and is it like, and vulnerable probably, and it cracked you open to the stuff that needed to, it's like it needed that wounding to be open again, to so that it could bleed and really let stuff go. And this is the thing, birth, it's like, again, goosebumps. It just has so much wisdom that we can never truly understand. And like, we can optimize to have this, you know, this certain birth that we really want. And sometimes that is an alignment for us to have that. But then both us and our baby might come with a different story that needs to be unfolded through a different kind of birth that wasn't in our birth plan. And to also see that is so healing, and to realize it's not up to you to be perfect. You know, we have this, I think most of us have this good girl complex of like, you know, perfectionism and kind of, wanting to do it the right way, maybe, you know, whatever that looks like for us. And when it doesn't happen, you know, we can tend to feel disappointed or, but to me, gosh, your birth sounded like just what you needed.
Yeah, definitely. It's coming together now. And I think it will come together throughout my life. I think it's one of those things that you don't have the why straight away. You have to live through it to understand it. And I'm still doing that. And what was hard was that the postpartum period for that one was difficult. Interestingly, I had like a very difficult time with my mother during that. And, you know, she, of course, she's part of the whole trauma story as well. But it was interesting that first postpartum period, when I needed a lot of mothering, that I didn't quite experience that. And there was a lot of conflict. So it kind of augmented what was opened during the birth. And I was left with these questions of like, what does all of this mean? What does motherhood mean? Yeah. Who am I as a mother, and who am I supposed to be? And how do I take care of this person as well as taking care of myself, and also taking care of and understanding my mother and my past? Like, how does all this happen? So there were a lot of questions that were opened in that postpartum period. And I definitely struggled with anxiety and even depression at some points. And but it all kind of informed what would come next. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how, with all the sleep deprivation that we had and all that we were going through, you know, like the custody battle was still going on. And you know, trying to settle into a still very new marriage. I don't know how we survived that first year. I think every child truly brings a bounty with them, a bounty of something, spiritual power, emotional something, but you pull through the darkest, the hardest. My son had a lot of allergies. And so from 4 months on, like, he just wasn't sleeping. He had eczema. He was allergic to everything. It was an intense rite of passage as a parent, for sure. And then somehow we agreed that we were ready to try again. And I was still breastfeeding. And all of my medical providers were saying, you know, you're still breastfeeding, even though you're menstruating, it's going to take you a long time to conceive. And so my husband and I were like, yeah, it's going to take us a long time to conceive. So we started trying at 15 months and I got pregnant, and he was like, hard to conceive, my butt, like, look at you. So it was interesting timing, because the custody battle was going to be finalized right when we were planning to tell people that I was pregnant. And I was really stressed out about that. Like, oh my gosh, like, is there going to be retaliation for this? Like, all of that. And my brother had asked me, did you plan when you were going to get pregnant? Like, did you plan it to be like timed in this way? And I said, I didn't know when I would get pregnant. I didn't realize it would be that somehow having had a pregnancy kind of increased fertility in some ways.
I think that's a very strange thing for providers to say. I would definitely not say that, especially like, I mean, you can get pregnant breastfeeding at 6 weeks, eight weeks, you know, if you ovulate. Now, a lot of women don't for the first few months, maybe 6 months, maybe a year even, you know, it takes time for some to get back their period if they're solely breastfeeding, especially when you're in a full-time breastfeeding. So it depends. If you don't breastfeed, you know, then you can get pregnant pretty quickly. But if you breastfeed, but you get your period back, I mean, women get their period back by 3 months or something, 4 months sometimes after giving birth.
Yeah,
you can get pregnant. You know,
varies. Yeah, yes. I mean, I don't know if they said it because I was 35, like I'm older. I don't know.
Oh God, yes, you're geriatric, darling. You are a geriatric mother. Goodness me.
So silly. So silly.
Yes,
changed my view on those things for sure. Mm-hmm. But it was the perfect time. And as the pregnancy unfolded, it was so clear that it was the perfect time. And I remember, in fact, the month before I got pregnant with my second son, his name is Rafi, I had a massage that was done. But this person who does this massage is super intuitive. And somehow, whenever he does this massage, I go places. And
the best kind of massage.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so healing. It's so vital and nourishing. And in July of last year, I got this massage and I went someplace. I went over the rainbow to the other side of the universe. I saw it so clearly, like I was in this other place. And I started weeping because I realized like their time doesn't matter because all souls are unified in this place. And I felt like this presence. And a month later, I was pregnant. And I know that presence, like, I know I went there, met him, we made an agreement, and he came back with me. Like, that's where he came in, my second son.
Wow.
And so from the beginning, it was, you know, like this connection. But it was hard during the pregnancy because we were extremely stressed out. My husband was switching jobs in the midst of, you know, oh, we're going to have a third child in our household. And the custody battle was just about to finish. Like it was going to finish in January. So my husband was not able to be present with me for those first 4 months because he was in the thick of it, which was sad a little, you know, because you want someone to be excited with you when you're pregnant. You know, all these changes are happening and you want him to witness it. And I didn't feel like he could. Although I'm sitting at his desk right now, and what I see is he put my pregnancy test on under his computer and had told me that he did that to motivate him through his work days because he knew the baby was coming. And so there he was thinking about it, but in his own way, kind of like self-contained. So the first part of that pregnancy, I was frustrated because it wasn't the way it was with my first, where I was like, oh my gosh, there's a baby in my belly. This is so exciting. It was more just like a, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? How are we going to get through? But January came and went and everything went, you know, as smooth as can go under the circumstances with a divorce. And then I was finally, after January, I was like, okay, let's focus. What are the things we don't want to happen this time around? And I had already chosen a home birth midwife because I had decided I don't want to transition while I'm in labor. So I had found a midwife. I had interviewed, you know, 12 private midwives in the Denver area and found one who I felt was a match, but I can't tell you objectively why. It was just like I'd like you to be that person.
Trusting our mama intuition. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it wasn't like, oh, I've been in practice for 17 years, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't that. It was like, I met her and we vibed.
Yeah.
And
that's the most important thing. Like, you know, that is the most important thing because the relationship, the rapport, the trust is everything. Yeah. The ones you have in your birth space should be people that you fully, completely trust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Totally. Definitely. It's the vibe. The vibe is everything.
It is. Yeah. And there are so many able, capable, reliable midwives. It was wonderful to even understand that there is a rich midwife, certified professional midwife community here. But to find the one that fit, because there were beautiful ones that I talked to and I was like, I could totally see you doing this for me. And there's something else I'm wanting. And I liked the name of my midwife's practice. It was Holding Light Midwifery, which I was like, yes, it does feel like you're holding light. Like that is what I want. So and then in our first meeting, she said, I asked her, you know, how early do you start providing care for your clients? Because, you know, I'm only like 6 weeks pregnant. And she said, I think it would be best to start as early as possible, because in the event of a miscarriage, you still need a midwife in that situation. And how good would it be to have established care with a midwife to go through something like that? And I was like, you said it. That's the thing I was looking for. We are going to work together now. So she was wonderful from the beginning and also picked up on how stressed out I was and the different dynamics. And that's what was amazing about this midwifery, switching from even the birth center midwives who had practiced in hospitals for years and mm-hmm. so still had hospital mannerisms in a way. She was different in that, you know, in hospital, they tend to have different boundaries, and those are boundaries that are vestiges from medical school. You know, in medical school, you have to just keep your stuff together and just perform. I don't want to know what's happening in your life. Show up, even if it's hard. Don't talk to me about, you know, your innermost. So sometimes people who've been trained in the medical model continue that of like, my boundary is just what's happening with your pregnancy, even if outside stuff is impacting it. Midwifery is not like that, in the sense of like, you are a whole person.
Yes, it's very holistic.
If you argued with your husband, I want to know, like, how is that impacting mm-hmm. how you're feeling right now? And what's going on in your home? How can we help make this better for you? Because ultimately it is about your pregnancy and you, and it will impact your baby, you know? So I loved that, these longer appointments where she's getting to know more about happening. It was
like what you say is so true, and I really want women to understand that. I mean, sometimes I understand, you know, if you can find publicly funded midwives in a birth center or even home birthing midwives that are publicly funded and you don't have to pay, and you know, you don't have excess amount of money, or you just don't have the finances to pay, because you know it's a cost to have an independent midwife. But what you're trading is that, right? It's, they can be beautiful, but ultimately they are employed by the birth center and the hospital, whereas an independent midwife is actually employed by you. Mm-hmm. And it is a massive difference. You don't think it is, but it is. Mm-hmm. I have experience of all the kinds of midwifery, and it is, because when you work as a midwife in the hospital or in the birth center, if it's not a privately owned, you know, obviously that's different. But if that birth center, you know, connects to a hospital or is, you know, state kind of care, whatever, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You are an employee of towards the state or towards the hospital, and their guidelines and policies are definitely not evidence-based, unfortunately, mm-hmm. as, you know, many people think, and also a lot of practitioners will say. I mean, if you actually are honest, evidence that comes out today will not be in practice until in 30 years' time. That's how long time it takes for evidence to make it into the actual hospital. So whatever they're practicing was maybe evidence-based 30 years ago, definitely not today. Mm-hmm. And so you have these midwives that are there, and I've worked in it, and you feel bound. Like, I felt like I could not practice midwifery the way I wanted to. That's why I left the hospital system 2019, you know, because I felt like a prisoner. I couldn't be the woman-centered, fully holistic midwife that I wanted to be. All my, not all my colleagues, but, you know, I would get comments like, you know, I was this hippie midwife who spent too much time helping women with breastfeeding or actually listening to their stories or, you know, seeing the whole woman, as you're saying, right? Because when you're in a system, you have a set amount of time, you know, it might just be 15 minutes antenatally to see a woman, but well, you then hear, oh my gosh, she had this argument with her husband. Maybe there's some, you know, now I'm going to other things, but DV or other situations, 15 minutes doesn't give you enough time to really sit. So you go over time and, you know, it just kind of, the system is so failing women. It's a very broken system.
Yeah.
I'm going on a tangent. I'm sorry.
No, and that's the thing. It's I am as well. And that's what I was finding myself being frustrated because, yes, I'm extremely privileged that I'm able to get this type of care. And we see like about health disparities of how certain ethnicities really have worse outcomes in childbirth and things like this, right? Yes. And they, I mean, people, most people don't have access to this. And we can see where those health disparities begin because maybe there are certain communities that might need to, or certain people who might need that extra 45 minutes to really understand what's happening there. And that would make the life-changing difference because a mother who's giving birth in a DV situation is probably more likely to hemorrhage, right?
Yes, like there's so many. Absolutely, 100%.
And that's what makes me sad that, yes, I'm super grateful that we can do this thing. Even though my husband grumbled through it, now he sees the value of it. But yeah, it's a huge investment. Like I couldn't have done it if I was having this child by myself at all with the income that I was making. And so, and how sad that you have to choose something lesser because of your income. But I'd love to one day do something about that. But I really felt that difference. Like, gosh, I'm so lucky to have this support.
And you know what? I just want to also say that, you know, because partners might not always understand why a woman wants to choose home birth. And a lot of the times, I would say 99% of the time when I meet a couple and the woman wants to have a home birth, the partner's usually not that convinced, right? And for many reasons, like thinking the hospital is safer, but also the finances, like, oh, with this option we have to pay for, the other one is free. Without a freaking doubt, I've never, ever not had this reaction. At the birth and like the moments after and the hours after, the partner is the one that's like, oh my God,
wow.
they almost, I can see their eyes. They almost want to become a midwife. They always want to be a doula. Yeah. Like they're just like, this was like the most amazing experience. Yeah. Oh my God, home birth. Oh my God, home birth is amazing. Because they've had maybe this other experience of a hospital birth before and they go like, whoa, like, that time, like it was like this emergency in the room, and like this time, like you guys didn't do anything.
that's exactly.
And, you know, it'll come and tell you how many dads are like, I was looking at you, and you were just so calm, and I was like,
that's what he said.
Why aren't you doing anything? And then he says like, oh, then I realized like, oh yeah, she's doing everything. Like you guys don't have to do anything. Yeah, it's amazing, and it's so rewarding. Yeah. Like. To see the dads and their experience, and like they're the biggest home birth advocates after that. They tell all their friends, all their mates, their work colleagues, they tell everybody about the home birth.
yeah and that's totally what happened. I sent one of the pictures I sent to you. You could see my husband, his face is like when the baby comes out. I'm so happy he had that. But yeah, it was a challenge. I mean, the arguments we had leading up to this, I'm like, I can't believe we're paying this much for this. And she is going to try charging insurance, which is going to be interesting. If we get something back, it'll have been cheaper than the birth center. So there's some progress happening in that direction. However, the upfront cost is definitely, that's there. But yes, it was the care that I needed, and I could text her, call her, send her messages. And, you know, she just held space for my anxieties. She held space for the fact that my toddler came to every single appointment we had for the entire pregnancy. And even my stepson came to like four of them. And sometimes we had, you know, these kids running around in the room while we're trying to listen on the Doppler and all this. So she just like held space for all of it and knew what was happening with my stepson and knew what was happening with my son when he was sick. And they came in one time, they were sick, they slept on her
her couch during the appointment. Like, it was just great, you know?
Do you want a natural birth, mama? Then a natural birth course might be for you. Do you see birth as a rite of passage and an important and transformational event that you'd like to feel fully empowered in meeting? Are you, like many other women, realizing that it is time to take back your power as a birthing woman in the birth space and birth your baby your way? Would you like to feel calm and confident as you birth your baby with all the tools you need in order to meet the labor sensations naturally and be ready body, mind, and soul? Do you deeply down know that your body was made to birth your baby and that you have all the inherent power and inner wisdom to do so? Are you looking for holistic midwifery wisdom and guidance to assist you and give you all the evidence-based information you need in order to feel fully sovereign in your decision-making around your pregnancy and upcoming birth? Then the Natural Birth Course is for you. Find out more at thenaturalbirthcourse.com.
So I started gathering birth stories from my mother, her birth of me, and my grandmother, her birth of my mom, because I knew that some of what came up during my birth was not mine exclusively. And what was so interesting was when my mom was telling me about when she was giving birth to me, we had a lot of the same thoughts in the room. And I think a lot of women have those thoughts, but it was interesting, like this thought of like, I'm going to die and I can't do this and all of that. And my mother had told me that she like passed out right before I was born. So again, I'm like indoctrinated to feel that birth is going to be this rough thing because my mother has told me like, I couldn't handle it. I fainted at the end type thing. But talking through it, recording our birth stories was helpful for me because it started to organize some stuff. I knew I needed to do family work. I knew I needed to do ancestral work. I didn't know how to go about doing it. So I just started there. It was like, let's do our birth stories. And doing the birth stories also healed a lot with my mom because I was able to come to a place where I said, you know, she's not going to change in this lifetime and I don't need her to. And I can, you know, these things that happened between us were hard, really, really hard, but they made me who I am and it's who she is. And I can accept that. I can accept that she's not going to change and I can accept that I still love her. And it was, so things started organizing with that part of the trauma. And it wasn't because I went to like extensive therapy or read this book on how to do it. It was just, I asked questions. And when you ask questions, I think the universe aligns to help you answer them in some sort of way. So I started with that. And then I was looking for prenatal yoga classes because I remember really enjoying that in my first pregnancy. And still post-COVID, even though things are settling down, I still couldn't find many. But then the last month of my pregnancy, the place where I was practicing yoga decided to hire someone for a prenatal class. So I got to go to about 5 classes before my baby came. And this woman, we did those, you know, those keep-ups or it's like something that you do for a minute that's a little bit uncomfortable that's supposed to prepare you for labor. So she did a bunch of those in class. And I realized this woman has the key to help me move through labor. There's something that she's guiding me to that feels like it's going to get me through labor. So I asked if I could meet with her privately, like between the classes. And I met with her twice in the week before my son came. And she taught me a chant in Sanskrit. It's Satanama, which is about balance. It's like birth, life, rebirth, death, like that that's what it symbolizes. And you just kind of chant it for 11 minutes, and you do that for X amount of time, and it helps kind of balance and cleanse. But it's also in line with like doing something for 11 minutes, focusing, mindfulness. So it can be helpful in labor. So we did this during one of my classes with her at home. And what was so interesting was while I was chanting that, my son kind of calmed down, because my son's very energetic and runs around. He kind of calmed down and started like working on a puzzle. My dog, who's very like, blah, he sat down and fell asleep. And I was just able to like be in this chant for 11 minutes, which is a phenomenal thing for a mother of a toddler to be able to do, like, ever. And then I saw her one more time. And then pretty much after that, labor started, and I was able to use what she gave me, this gift that she gave me in labor. And so I guess we can go into now my beautiful home birth. So we had this lunar eclipse recently, right? And the blood moon. And that Monday I started having some labor, but it wasn't maintaining a pattern. It was like one was at 8 minutes, the next one was 48 minutes later, and then one was at 16, and then two and four, just all over the place. So we didn't know what was going on. And that happened for about 2 days, that Monday and Tuesday. And then it just stopped. Tuesday night, I went to bed, nothing. Wednesday, all day, nothing. And we were getting close to, so I was 4 days out from my due date. My due date was on Sunday. My first son's birthday was on Saturday. Mm-hmm. So I was like, what's going to happen? Is my son going to be born on the same day or something like this? And so my husband had this work meeting that he really didn't want to have to do on Thursday. And he said, you know, it would be really cool if you went into labor like Thursday, I wouldn't have to go to this work meeting. And I was getting worried that I was going to go over 40 weeks because here you can, of course, always say no to induction at 42. And we know that. And I know that from your podcast, too. They will put an enormous amount of pressure on you. They will try to scare you, use all the scare tactics, like you're killing your baby, blah, blah, blah. But you can opt out for as long as you want, as long as you have the strength to opt out from all these induction things. But I didn't even want to go there. I just wanted things to happen, you know, without having to go to the hospital, because in the US, you do have to transfer to hospital care post 42 weeks. I was 2 weeks away from this, but my anxious mind was already there. Yeah, so on the day before I gave birth, I convinced my husband to try having sex, because he is one of those who's like, after 7-8 months, it's like a little bit weird. But I was like, you know, if we try, it could start things and things can move along. And he was like, okay. So he did it. And it was, you know, really nice to have like that last connection before we're going to have several weeks when we can't, when I'm still recovering. But I was proud of him that he pushed through his anxieties about that. And then after sex, it was like, I didn't feel very normal after that. It was like things were picking up again, but kind of mildly. And then in the middle of the night, it was 3:21. I remember Thursday morning, I woke up and I was like, oh, that's a pain, and started timing my contractions. And I decided to wait about an hour to see that it was really like established. So around 4:30, I woke up my husband and I was like, you know, I think your wish is coming true. I've been having contractions. They're consistent and, you know, definitely for the past hour. So he was really sweet. You know, he got out of bed. I had said I wanted candles at home. So he started lighting the candles. And then, can I make you the labor aid, like the coconut water with the lime and stuff like this? And it's like, yeah, let's do that. And then he inflated the birth pool and all of this. And he's just like gingerly walking around the house, like doing these little things. And I started laboring. So when I started laboring at 3:21, this interesting thing happened. The Satanama mantra came out of my mouth during the pain. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. And it was also interesting that it helped me breathe to have this mantra. So each contraction that came, I almost involuntarily just Satanama, just said it through the contraction. And it just helped me ride through it, to stay with it, to be in it, and to have a way to know that, oh, it's starting to end now. And then I would end with like an om to just like ground me back after the contraction. And I did that with every single contraction until my son was born, pretty much, which was so interesting, because it wasn't a conscious choice. It was just top of mind, maybe. I had just done it a few days prior. I had just learned it and it stuck.
Yeah.
So I started laboring like that with my Satanama, with my candles. And I tried making the labor aid myself. And then I was like, wow, this is really intense. I have to focus. I can't do this. and then my son woke up as if he knew, at 5:45, and our stepson was also in the house that night, which, you know, we only have him part-time, but he happened to be there that night too. So my son first woke up and he was like, hey, mama, mama, like, what's going on? And he's trying to hang out and I'm like stopping and doing this thing and vocalizing. But he's fine. He's just kind of bopping around. And then my midwife had recommended that I get a sibling doula, because I said, what are we going to do with the kids if they're home when this happens? Another thing that my husband grumbled about, but I have to say he raves about the sibling doula now that we had that. But so I called the sibling doula. And she was great because, you know, if the kids are sleeping or at school, then she can switch to doula, which was amazing. So I called her. She happened to be in Denver that night. She lives in the mountains normally, but she happened to be 12 minutes away.
Whoa.
And so she came around 6:30 in the morning and, you know, helped like feed my son and helped me, like tended to me as well. And then my stepson woke up and he's getting ready for school too. And he had been anxious about me going into labor. He saw some of the prodromal labor. And one day he had said to me, Shiva, aren't you glad that Zeki and I will never have to experience this because we're boys? So he was anxious about the labor, but he saw me in labor. And I think the Satanama mantra really helped because I wasn't shouting. I was just kind of singing through it. So it helped everyone kind of stay calm, including myself. And so, you know, Ted took Lalo, my stepson, to school, and the sibling doula was able to stay with me and kind of doula for me. And then he came back and he took my my little son to preschool. And then my midwife, you know, she was taking her time. She was kind of like, let's see what happens, you know, how this is going to move along. So she came around 9:30. So I had been having contractions for maybe like 8 hours at that point. And she said, do you want me to check you? And I had told her, like, when I go into labor, I don't want to be checked. I just kind of want to have things go the way that they go. But I think she was not sure, like, whether this was early or later in the labor. So finally, I was like, I don't want to be demoralized when you tell me that I'm 3 centimeters. And she said, I don't think you're 3 centimeters. Let me check, you know, if it's not worth talking about, I won't talk about it. And I said, okay. So she checked. And while she was checking, she said, what is that? Oh, your bag of waters is bulging out. You are 8 centimeters, which was insane because I had expected to lose my mind again. I had expected to go to these places. And yes, I had done work. And I think the work that I did was so, it changed me, but I didn't expect that I was going to be whole in mental capacity at 8 centimeters, meaning like I was still, Ted had gone out to get food for the birth team. And I was with it enough to go on my phone to see where his location was, to be like, why aren't you home? Can you come home? Like, that's how engaged I still was with everything around me at 8 centimeters. And it was just blowing my mind because all I was doing was this chant. And it was interesting because I remember the point that must have been transitioned because I was doing sa, and then it started to go louder, ta, and I was just repeating sa, ta, louder and louder. And I said to myself, I think that's transition, but could it be because I'm still okay? And I kept saying, like, how am I still okay? But my vocalizations are totally different. Like, I'm okay, but my body is reacting differently to it. And it was funny because I think I told you Lenica's podcast was the one that really inspired me and helped kind of arm me for this experience in some ways. And she was talking about how she noticed that her vocalizations became and it was even before she felt the pressure to push, right? And that is exactly what was happening, in that my vocalization was more of a signal than, you know, my state emotionally of what was happening in my body. Like, my body was just doing it, which was really cool. It's being able to have that mantra kept me from ever screaming. Like, I remember I did shout quite a bit the first time, and this time it was just chanting. Like, we chanted the baby out.
And this thing, you know, you found your tool, and this is, you know, everyone's going to have a different tool. It can be the breath, mental focus, it can be sounding. And I guess what you did brought all of those three together, because it, especially mantras, are designed to lock your mind, like to really give you a one-pointed focus, and vibrating at a certain frequency, you know, also kind of opens your pituitary gland and, you know, really quiet. It just cuts the mind chatter. That's what mantra is about. It cuts through the bullshit. And so even if there was some stuff that might have come up if you hadn't done that mantra, the mantra just cleared that shit. Just going, like, you're not, that's not getting in. It's like you're almost creating a sacred space around you and in your mind. And there's absolutely no room for thoughts when you're doing a mantra. And so you can't get into the fear, pain, you know, tension cycle, right? That a lot of mamas can get stuck in. So it's like you found this perfect remedy for you to carry you through. And this is the magic, isn't it? That when we master our mind, when we don't let fear and mind get in the way, then birth can happen through us. Like, mind is 99% of birth is mind.
It is. And I felt it because I had the privilege and the opportunity to actually feel the euphoria this time, which I did not feel in the first pregnancy. But this time, what was crazy was, you know, these intense contractions. And then between them, I was like, wow, I feel amazing. This is amazing. And there was another moment where I traveled back to that place I went to in the massage. And I was like, I'm bringing him. Like, it was just, I had these beautiful images, these beautiful moments in the midst of labor. And, you know, I watched the movie Orgasmic Birth, and, you know, I saw these women, and it's kind of a cheesy movie, you know, because it's very like 90s. But I was like, okay, like, this wasn't just like a cheesy thing from the 90s of like women trying to get into this. No, like, this happens. It can happen when you tell yourself that the fear doesn't serve me. Of course the fear is there. It will be there. It's as long as you're alive, fear is a potential companion. It's always possible. But I'm choosing to say, fear, please sit down. I see you. You can take a seat right there. I'm going to do this, and it's okay, even though you're in the room. I know I'm a little bit afraid, but I'm also engaging in this other way. And when you do that, meaning you can't eradicate the fear, I think, in my opinion, it's not going to happen. And don't try to, but let it be a companion, and let yourself continue walking with it and say, okay, like, this whole other experience opens up when you allow fear to take a seat, you know? And it was, wow. Like, it just remembering the capacity that I had to feel that, it was this joy, this bliss. I can't use words to describe it. It's the most like wonderful feeling that you can have, but there are also contractions happening. So it's just, you feel completely alive in a way. You're both intimately connected to life, but also infinitely diffuse with the whole experience of the universe. Like it's this, yeah, it's like this other way of existing. And yeah, I had the privilege to feel that this time, which was incredible. And I'm so grateful. If it was the mantra, the thoughts that I, the investigation and discoveries that I did during pregnancy, whatever it was, or just the time in my life, if most women could feel this, I think we would lose our fear of death. We would lose our fear of having our own voice, you know, like you would be able to just exist. If every woman could just feel this, she would never doubt her power, you know? So that was awesome and incredible. And yeah, so she said, you're 8 centimeters and where is Ted? We need him to start filling the pool like now. And so we call him and the doula told him like, you know, she's 8 centimeters and he's kind of like, oh, okay. And my midwife's like, she's 8 centimeters. You need to be here. So, I don't think he understood like the gravity of the situation. So, he's coming back. He was like buying bagels and then he went to Whole Foods to buy like spreads and dips and stuff because he's thinking it's a whole day thing. I don't know. Or he was scared, which I think is very likely to, like he was being avoidant. But my midwife was like, we have to set up everything. He's not going to be here on time. So everyone like sprung into action, like she and her assistant, the doula, started spreading the drop cloths and then took the hose and we're starting to fill the bathtub. And I had thought that I wouldn't want to ever birth in the water. And I didn't in my first one. I birthed on a birthing stool, which was again, how I visualized it. But with this one, she said, let's try it for transition. You might find that it's really helpful. So we got the bathtub, the birthing pool ready. And then Ted came home and started kind of like, okay, fine, focusing. And I got into the birth pool and it was, yeah, like 10 out of 10. If you're finding that you're struggling with transition, please try the water. It was really, it just helps things kind of like melt off in a way it felt. So yeah, I got in and it started to get really intense because I think by the time the pool was ready, I was maybe 9 centimeters. And then after that, you know, you're pretty much, yeah, 10 just kind of happened. And we weren't checking though. This is just based, she checked once, that one time. So then I remember, yeah, I was really holding on to the mantra like a life vest. Like I was like, this is all I have right now. And there was this one point where I remember I was saying, I'm pushing. Like I had started pushing and there was this a little bit of fear, kind of like when a little child is constipated and he doesn't want to poop. And, but he can't help it and it's starting to come and you're just kind of panicking. I remember telling her, I felt like a child when I was like, I'm pushing. And, my husband was, you know, right there through all of this. And, he told me that it was at that point that he started to panic a little bit because it was taking them longer to find his heart rate because he was in my pelvis. Like his whole body was there. And he said, I don't understand why she's being so calm. Like Shiva's not going to be able to push this out. Like it's going to take too long. And he had all this stuff that was happening. And then like minutes later, the baby was born and he was like, I didn't realize that you were actually doing it, that she was just calm because everything was happening as it needed to be. But in my mind, I was like, why isn't she taking this seriously? The midwife. So it's very much how you were saying, you know, the fathers kind of get panicked when the midwives are just calm because everything is unfolding as it should. And so the bag of waters was coming out first, which was interesting. And my son was, his head was born in the bag of waters. And then my waters broke, which I didn't really feel because I was just focused on pushing him out. But yeah, so he was born partially in call, which was amazing. And it's funny because there are these two pictures where, so Ted caught Rafi, and when he's when we're taking him out of the water, you could see Ted has kind of this look of like almost horror on his face of like, what? And it was because the sack was over his face. So he didn't look like, he didn't look like what he was expecting to see, which was just a baby, but he, this baby with something on him. And then the midwife, you know, lifted it up over the baby's head. And then my, the next picture, my husband's like, because the baby's fine. So it was, so he caught the baby. It all came out like so calmly and it progressed so quickly and without this like panic and stress. And it was just euphoric. And yes, now Ted understands why I wanted. And that was my first bit, like the baby was in my arms and I'm leaning back against the birth pool and I turn around and I was like, do you get it now? Do you understand why I wanted this? And he said, yes. But that was like my first thing. I almost felt like the whole time I was just like, please, I just want Ted to understand why I'm doing it like this. And I knew that somehow this birth was going to be healing for us as a family. Like it was just going to be something that we need. And it very much was. It was a threshold that we crossed into what feels like the next stage of our marriage, of our familyhood, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, he was born 2 days before my first son's birthday, a few days before our anniversary. Statistics say that if a second marriage makes it to 3 years, the chances of it working out become the same as a first marriage. Mm. So when I had learned that in my mind, I was like, we have to make it to 3 years. We have to make it to 3 years. So he, you know, my son kind of ushered us into this next stage of like, okay, we made it to 3 years. We're a family. We're growing stronger and we've had this healing experience at home. So it was everything that I was needing and hoping for in so many different ways.
Wow.
And then, yeah, so the placenta last time I was a little frustrated because I found out that they did managed the placenta portion, managed third stage, which I did not want, but I actually didn't know that that was going to be something that they would want to do. They felt that I had been pushing for too long, that second stage took too long in my first pregnancy. So after Zeki came out, they gave me a shot of Pitocin. And so the placenta came out 3 minutes after Zeki came out. Mm. And I was a little frustrated because the Pitocin shot, I felt it in my arm for almost 4 months after. Like I could just, it was just this knot in my arm that I felt. And then I read some research that said like Pitocin during labor and delivery can increase likelihood of having postpartum depression just because it kind of like,
yes,
can do stuff to your hormone. It's a synthetic hormone. So the chances of you having a reaction to that are high-ish. And so part of me was like, I wonder if my postpartum depression came from having to have Pitocin at that point. And I was a little resentful because it was, you're already vulnerable. And they're asking you like, is it okay if we give you Pitocin? And I'm just like, why? We don't want you to hemorrhage. Well, I don't want to hemorrhage. I now that you said that, how is that a choice that you're giving me? Like, now I'm afraid that I'm going to die. So yes, give me the Pitocin. It didn't feel, and I don't know how I could have been more informed unless I were a doctor or a midwife and had been actively involved in managing my own care through that. I don't know how else I could have been more empowered in that moment, but
yeah, well, I wish. Yeah, I guess anyone listening, I guess, you know, this is something that definitely should be talked to you about, whether you're going with an obstetrician, midwife, you know, hospital, whatever. You should always talk about the different options of actively managing the placenta or the physiological way, which is the natural way of just the placenta birthing itself. And talk about, like, this is how you can suss out, is this the professional that I want to work with? Because they might go, the response is not what you want to hear, right? But it's not aligned with your birth wishes. And So for anyone listening who doesn't know this, so most hospitals, most care providers will automatically do active third stage, which is what you had with the first Baba, which is a shot of synthetic oxytocin, and it is to expel the placenta to make your uterus contract very forcefully, very strongly, so it's stronger than your own contractions, and then to birth the placenta manually so that the practitioner actually pulls on the cord and manually pulls the placenta out, whereas the natural way is obviously just like the baby, just it lets go when it's ready and it births naturally just like the baby, and no practitioner is doing absolutely anything to it. So the reason they wanted to give you that, I mean, did you bleed at all? Did you have a big, did they think that, oh, this is way too much? Was it just precautionary, really?
The total was 500 cc's, what they estimated. So I wasn't bleeding much. I was bleeding, but it wasn't crazy.
Yeah, so 500 mils, I guess that's cc. I'm not sure what that is the American equivalent of, but yes. 500 mils would be like, so half a liter, 500 mils. It's classified as a hemorrhage, but I really want to say the big but here, because some women will feel just a little bit of blood loss depending on, you know, their status before, how nourished they are, just, you know, what kind of person they are. Some people are really easily faint in normal life and they have low blood pressure and all of that, and some are really robust and they can handle like a liter and still be like up walking, breastfeeding, not symptomatic. So you know, I, you know, as a midwife, I've just seen so many different people bleed, right? and that's just a weird thing that they say. I personally wouldn't say, oh, just because you've bled 500 mils, you know, hemorrhaging, because I would look at you holistically and go like, are you pale? Are you dizzy? Are you faint? Are you really thirsty? Are you having a really high pulse rate? You know, I would look at the holistic picture of you. Are you talking? Are you happy? Are you breastfeeding? Are you like bonding with your baby? I mean, then that blood loss is not affecting you. But are you like barely being able to open your eyes? Are you like not being able to hold your baby? Are you really faint? Are you pale? Oh yeah, obviously you're getting affected by this blood loss. And that for you might be 300 mils or it might be like 900 mils. So that's like, this is the thing, how we, you know, the system treats women supposedly to be the same. Like everyone's supposed to have this kind of birth, you know, this long, and it should go in this manner, and you should bleed this much. And we're not like that. We're unique. No,
So I'm not sure. And the when I had showed my midwife how much that had been in the previous birth, she wasn't concerned. So it may not be the right amount that I'm telling you. It was my midwife said, oh, you didn't even bleed very much in your first one. So I'm not sure. I think they were just erring on the side of caution and kind of that, you know, hospital model of managing it so that they mitigate some liability for themselves. But so with this one, like 10 minutes passed and the placenta hadn't passed. And she said, you know, just in case, do you want to do some herbs? Because we can wait up to an hour, or we can do some herbs just to make sure, because, you know, your uterus is going to start contracting. So it's already contracting and we want to make sure the placenta is out before that's happening. So she gave me some herbs, and 2 minutes after the herbs, the placenta came out. But I don't know if even the herbs were effective or if my body was just like, okay, we're ready now, but came out like very easily and not painfully. And then we got out of the birth pool and sat on the couch, or, you know, reclined on the couch with the baby. And my son, so he was born 32 minutes before my son came home from school, from preschool. So my little son came in, and that was the first time in my life I've seen someone whose jaw actually dropped. And it was my son. He walked in and his little jaw just, he was just looking at everything, and the baby was there. So it was really sweet. And he immediately started kissing the baby, and it was really sweet. And then my stepson came home. And we had told him, you know, probably when you come home from school, you'll have your brother. And so he was, you know, also like really excited, but he's six. So he was like a little bit more aware of all the things. And yeah, it was just, it's been totally different. It's been tough, you know, three is a lot. But I think postpartum feels better because birth felt better. And was so healing. I think the birth really makes a difference in the postpartum. Not to say that you can't make your postpartum beautiful under other circumstances. You absolutely can. I definitely knew better what I needed postpartum this time. You know, we have our freezer is stocked with so many healthy foods, and my husband was able to take paternity leave. Again, that's a privilege. I have a cleaning lady for the next couple of months, something I didn't have last time. So I learned what I needed. So that made this postpartum better for sure. But yeah, I just feel really blessed, and I really believe in birth, and I want more women to believe in birth, and I want to find a way to help facilitate that, to just tell everybody, like, please realize that you've got options, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Amazing. What amazing two birth stories, both of them. Like, wow, what amazing wisdom they both carry for you. And yeah. So if you had a first-time mama in front of you right now who's about to have her first baby and she really wants to have a natural and empowering birth, what advice and pearls of wisdom would you give to her?
So I think the first one would be, you know, when you have a new lover or new love in your life, you become so curious and you just want to get all the information. You want to see pictures of them when they were a kid and you want to meet their friends. And some people, you know, you become really kind of almost obsessed with learning as much as you can about this new person who you're starting to love. I would say take that type of energy on with your pregnancy. Become so curious about it. Learn everything that you can from all the different places. You know, don't stick to what your obstetrician or midwife says. Don't stick to what the hospital covers in their, you know, childbirth education. Just be so curious to see different angles. Like, you'd go on Facebook to see what was he like in high school, right? Okay, so like, try to find different things about birth and develop your own definition and understanding of what this is that you're embarking on right now. That is the best way that you can gather the information that you need to make the choices that you want to make, because a lot of people are invested in telling you what you should be doing, but that's according to them. And in order for you to make a decision for yourself, you really need to do the curiosity work. You really need to go as far and as wide as you can to find out what this birth will mean for you and what you need from this birth. Because birth gives you things, not just a child. It gives you so much, and you kind of curate that experience. So be curious, just pursue it the way you would pursue a lover and a lover's heart. Just go into it with that passion. And then I would also say, I've heard this a lot, but surrender, but I didn't know what surrender meant. And what I found surrender to mean for me was to find the ways that you can surrender. For me, that was my mantra. That was what helped me both stay present and also remain trusting. So do a bunch of things and you'll be surprised in the end what works for you. But that's the thing. It's the pursuit of what's going to work for you. That could be yoga poses. It could be listening to this podcast. You know, one of the other things I did was I found an episode that really resonated with me and I felt really helped me. And I just listened to that one over and over and really internalized it. And parts of that podcast came through to me during the labor. So find what surrender means to you, which is going to be different for everybody. I took hypnobirthing for my first birth, and I have to say that I didn't have a single hypnobirthing thought during any of my births because it wasn't for me. And it is for other people. That works beautifully for other people. But surrender meant something else for me. And it meant going back to my roots, having a mantra, and really digging into that. And then I think another thing is realizing that birth is big, and it will benefit you to go and try and do some inner work, some family work, some ancestral work. And it can sound really esoteric or inaccessible when someone says, like, do the inner work or do ancestral healing. It can sound really arbitrary even. But I think the best way to start with something like that is to just begin to ask questions and just begin to fill in some blanks in your life. Because like we said, we talked about before, like when you ask questions, usually the universe rushes to help meet them in some way. So the universe will unfold things for you. Your birth will unfold things for you. But let yourself go into this journey and explore this stuff and find out what comes up for you. It'll be unexpected. Those would be the pearls that I learned from this one.
Wow, beautiful. Thank you so much, Shiva, for sharing your birth stories and for sharing your personal wisdom. It's been an honor having you on.
Thank you so much. Thank you for all that you're doing. And I mean, you were a big connection for me in my process and figuring this out, and all the stories that you've revealed with the women that you work with, and that it's helped me find my path through this. So thank you so much. And I hope you have all the resources to continue doing this. It's beautiful work that you're doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's such a beautiful thing to say.
Thank you for listening. If you love this podcast, then please share it. Grade it on iTunes and leave a comment. If you want to connect on social media, you can find me on Facebook as The Spiritual Midwife or on Instagram as the_spiritual_midwife. Thank you for listening.